Welcome to the Calgary Sessions. This is episode number 87. I'm your host, Jeff Humphreys. I almost messed that up again. Today's guest, this is going to be a really cool conversation because what you're doing is very, very special. And I can't wait to hear it because I might have heard about it over the years, but it's not too recently. I've been very aware of what you're up to. So please, your name and who you are.
My name is Janine. And I am the founder and guardian of the Alice Sanctuary.
And my girlfriend, I said it off camera, loves what you do. So she's jacked that you're on the show. And thanks to Julie for setting this up.
Yeah, thank you.
So the gist of the show, I like the guests to kind of go back as far as they want to go. Where they grew up, how they grew up, you know, how their parents inspired them, how experiences kind of started shifting their path. You can get into school, you get into sports, you can get into whatever you want. And then I'm just going to drag you along to where you are today and how the sanctuary actually came into your world. So go ahead. Take it back as far as you want to go.
Okay, well, I was born and fast forward from there.
Where were you born?
I was born in Orangeville, Ontario.
Okay.
And then I spent a good chunk of my younger years until I was 19 in Brampton.
Okay. You see what's crazy? The guest that was on before you was from Brampton too.
Really?
Yeah.
So such a small world. Like everything just kind of... Brampton's grown so much, like exponentially. So I feel like, you know, lots of people know about Brampton now. And whereas before when I lived there, it wasn't much, you know, the pocket was pretty small. It was smaller than what it is now, right? Yep. So it's expanded greatly. But I haven't been back to Ontario for years now. But my mom still lives there in a tiny farm.
Anyway, did you grow up on a farm?
I didn't grow up on a farm.
Okay.
We moved from Orangeville straight into Brampton by the time I was about 4 or 5 years old.
Okay.
But I have, like, most generations in our family are farmers. So they're still farmers. My grandparents were community farmers. So they were engaged more on that, you know, perspective of farming in terms of, you know, how can they help community? But it was never an expansive farm, right? But they had tons and tons of land for, you know, their own grain and hay. And my grandmother was a huge part in, you know, creating this with my grandfather. And then I just had aunts that were also farmers, like aunts and uncles that were also farmers too. But I didn't know them too much, but I knew one who was a dairy farmer.
Yep.
We would frequently go and visit them and, you know, I'd go into the barns and be curious and lots of things that I now know that I'm just like, that's why that was going on. Okay, I get it now. So I do have a lot of past, like for animal agriculture and agriculture in general.
And you were just kind of around, like if you know, once you moved, were you just going back to these like family places and hanging out a little bit? Or was it just once you moved, it was
more visits, right? So we would go, like, especially with grandparents, we would go and we'd visit and spend some time with the aunts, spend some time with the uncles, you know, things like this. So it'd be periodic, but not as, not like a weekly or monthly thing. It would be, you know, and then it became less and less as we grew up and, you know, people were passing on and, you know, that gap started to increase. And so things like that just became more estranged, right?
But so what were you doing as a youngster? What were you, when you moved to Brampton, what were you doing?
Oh, gosh. I think my fondest memories were always my running shoes. You know, you always get those running shoes and they're all like special,
Do you remember the ones that you, so when you say that, my first, when I realized that shoes were a thing, there's two memories for me. One was I had a pink set of Converse.
Okay.
Like the high top ones.
Yeah.
And then I had the original black Air Jordans.
Okay.
Those are my kind of two go-tos when you say shoes.
Right.
Yeah.
I think my first were, the ones that I recognized were flashy Asics. So they had like, you know, the things that would go on the side, the stripes, that, but they would be like, whenever you flash them in different ways, they were different colors and they were maroon. I mean, like, I wore those things out, right?
Asics,
they're, like,
good
they're
one.
Just great. but I was quite an introvert as a kid. So I was just, I was really kind of, you know, I played sports. I was very active, but I wouldn't interact with people very well. So I was kind of more of a shy, you know, keeping to myself type of person.
And
So,
do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother. He's 10 years older than I am.
Okay.
We don't communicate that often just because of the age gap, and they're all living in Ontario too. And I've lived out here since I was 19.
Oh.
my mom got a different job, so we moved out here, and then my whole life just kind of, you know, did a big flip over there, and spent some time in college, and, you know, started social work and psychology, and then I went traveling. Well, I went traveling, I guess, initially to Guatemala and Belize, took a few months and just kind of explored. When I came back, I was, I guess, hooked on just kind of wanting to be in other places. I felt like I was, you know, more inclined to go and explore, especially more hidden types of, you know, cultures and, you know, communities and not the big cities. So my mom actually initiated the idea of going and teaching overseas. So I kind of took a break from, say, my school.
So what did that look like? So when you moved here, you moved to Calgary, how old were you?
I was 19.
19. So you were done high school? Was high school like just a blip on the radar for you? It's just like...
Thank God it's over.
It's over, yeah.
Yeah.
so then you come out here. An interesting... Did you go to post-secondary right away?
It took about a year to kind of figure it out. So I started working, and then I wasn't really super happy about it. It was kind of hard to move all the way out here and not have any friends, not have anybody you can really connect with.
And we still pretty shy when you came out here?
Oh, yeah.
So then that makes it even
I also have a lot of social anxiety, so and anxiety in general. So even just kind of connecting with people makes it a little bit more difficult. Even though I'm a Leo, but, you know, you'd think that that would be completely opposite.
So
maybe
you said,
I have this burning urge to know people, but I just don't know how to know people. So it was kind of a struggle.
Where were you working when you came out here?
Oh, God, Gargoyles?
No way.
Yeah. Yeah, so it just opened up, and I guess that was my first job. And I lived way down in Northwest, so me getting a job, you know, here, I think it was Electric Avenue at that time. It still is, probably. I'm not sure what
Gargoyles
it's called now.
Was on... First Street, wasn't it?
I can't remember.
I think it was on First Street.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I know.
So
I guess I met I met some people.
Yeah.
Outside of this area, outside of Gargoyles, actually, I used to go and frequent a coffee shop. It was such a, like, it was a little corner shop. Like, it was just into the hole. But I met a bunch of people that I felt, like, super aligned with. And they're the ones who actually pulled me out of my weird, anxious bubble because I felt like I was really, you know, connecting with them, right? And we were on the same page and, you know, on the same wavelength. And I didn't last at Gargoyles very long because I'm just not suited to that, you know? But I started to get into Greenpeace and I started to do... you know, other endeavors. And then that's when it took me to school for social work. And I started with psychology. I've always wanted to be a psychologist since I think my first textbook was when I was 14.
No way.
I love, well, actually I can't say I love human behavior, but I was naturally like inclined to watch human behavior. So I really wanted to be a psychologist. That was my main goal.
What do you think, why is that, you think? Like when you say watch people,
observe people's behaviors,
because you're so shy, you didn't want to,
yeah,
so you just be in the background watching it,
listening, not watching, in a creepy way,
but just in space, and
just in their space or in a space, and you just kind of you watch that type of behavior, like that interaction, the way that, you know, people respond and react to the world around them in that way, right? And I just maybe it's because I also was very curious about myself and like, why am I like this? Like, why do I have such struggles? Why am I not, you know, so easy to make connections and build relationships? And why do I react? And why do I have anxiety? Even though at that time I did not know what anxiety meant or anything like this, right?
Sure.
So, but yeah, like all of these things were just naturally interesting to me. So it's something that I just thought maybe I'd go in and start to research a little bit more on. And
it's pretty young, right? To be like 14 and kind of seeing that potential path.
That was very distinctual for me to know that that's something that I really wanted to do. But then I realized how much I didn't like statistics. So I got out of the whole psychology arena and jumped into social work, which felt a lot more personable as well, because you're a little bit more on the front lines. It's more, you know, in the thick of things. You're more like... you're more likely to be able to affect greater change as opposed to a psychologist point of view where it's more like, you know, appointments and, you know, I love what's happening today with psychology. It's more open. It's more geared for counseling. It's like engaging with groups. It's in, you know, I'm met a couple of great psychologists that are very inclined for community and stuff, right? Like building community and getting more social health and, you know, just working with people, right? Building and empowering. So that avenue looks a lot more enticing to me today than it did what I was thinking about psychology back then. Yeah. But yeah, so I guess the social work and I was in that field for a good 10 years. But before...
So you graduated and just got into the workforce right away.
I didn't even actually graduate yet because I was just like, I want to go traveling. I had just one year to go. And I'm like, I'm out. I'm done. Like, because you had to do practicums and you just, you know, I worked with special needs at that time and you're doing school and I was working full time and, you know, and just dealing with some other personal, you're growing up, right?
There's a lot going on.
Responding to the world around you and it's tiring. It's tiring, even at such a young age that, I mean, can imagine what it'd be like now, right? If I was that age and going through COVID and pandemic and like, you know, this whole extreme world that we're kind of, you know, experiencing, right? But anyway, I left.
So 1 year to go?
I have 1 year to go and I left. I flew, I went to Victoria
you
to take
a leave
break.
Or something?
Yeah.
Or like a year off, whatever, you just deferred it for a year? What do you do?
I just didn't go back. I just didn't go back.
You were done.
Yeah, I packed up my car and I drove to Victoria, BC, and found a place to stay and then rented a house in a couple of weeks later on and stayed there for a year and worked in Victoria and just explored Victoria.
Like on a whim or like what's
kind of, nobody was there that I knew. I didn't know anybody. I just felt like I just had to get out and I had to go and I had to experience something different. So I had to shake up my world a little bit, right? My thoughts weren't, you know, managing here. So everything just needed to be shaken off. And I'm like, I'm going to Victoria, BC. So I went to Victoria, BC and did a whole new world there for a year. And then I bought a plane ticket. I sold my car for a skateboard. And a plane ticket to Taiwan.
How old were you when you were
24? I was 24 at that time.
So something just like clicked. You're like, I need to stop this whatever routine you're in.
Yeah.
And just kind of shake things up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I moved to Taiwan and lived in Taiwan for 7 years.
Okay. Okay. So why Taiwan?
I'm not entirely sure. I feel like,
Did you see something? Like, was there like a...
No, there was nothing that was enticing. There's not much that's enticing about Taiwan at that time. Yeah. You know, a lot of my friends were also kind of on board with teaching overseas. So I think that's what, you know, like, again, my mom kind of inspired me to, you know, you travel to Guatemala and Belize, like, you know, you have this, you want to explore the world a little bit more. Here's an idea. What about teaching overseas? Right. Mm. So that kind of planted the seed for me. And I got a certificate for teaching ESL and everybody else wanted to go to someplace fancy and hot and, you know, fun.
Yep.
And I'm like, I don't know. Taiwan feels like it's calling me. I don't know why. I didn't have any, you know, connection or I didn't look at, you know, travel magazines about Taiwan, not that there would be any. I just felt like Taiwan was the place that I needed to go. So I got off the plane, spent a week on the basement of somebody's house.
Like knowing nothing.
Nothing. Knew nothing. Mm. Didn't have a job, didn't have anything. Mm. I just left.
And what did that feel like? Do you remember what it actually like, was it?
Scary. Like, very scary, but I felt something was, like I felt like there was an ease to it. Mm. You know, like something was going to be okay. Mm. So, you know, I don't know if that would be like, you know, exhilarating or anything. I didn't go for the exhilaration. I just went because I just knew that this was what was drawing me to do something, right? It was drawing me in. I mean, I had a lot of experience when I was in Belize and Guatemala too that kind of felt again like they were drawn, like there was a reason why I was there. There was a reason why I went to Guatemala. You know, there was a reason why I was experiencing so many things. But I think when you're that young, you also kind of don't have that inhibition, you don't have that guard that we commonly jump into the more experiences we have, especially the more negative experiences, we become guarded to the world around us, right? So at that time, I didn't really have that much, right? Like it was just like, okay, I've experienced a couple of things that were not so great, but you know, why not try to do this, right? There's no fear involved, right? But yeah. So you're open, like you're open to the universe going, okay, you need to do this next, or this is what, listen to this, right?
And that's unique, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Like not, you know, I'm sure in the moment you probably you couldn't understand that's what was actually happening. Now you get to a certain point where you can be reflective.
Yes.
And then it kind of starts making sense.
It does.
But that happens after years of experiences.
Yeah.
Where you can actually start formulating the why behind it.
Uh-huh. You know, it's very true. Mm-hmm. It also probably helps you with where you're at today, yeah. right? Like look what's, you know, look at, you've reflected on your past, look at everything that's kind of gained momentum through, you know, your journey and it's hard and it's been, you know, a challenge and been really difficult, but these things have all happened for a reason. So this is happening for a reason too. Mm-hmm. So believe in that, right?
Yeah.
Which is where I'm actually at today, but we'll talk about
we'll
that.
We'll get
a
there
bit.
For sure. So Taiwan, you land.
I landed. I was uncomfortable on a cold floor. And I got a job within a week and I stayed with that job for 7 years.
No way.
Yeah. And it was fascinating for me because, again, being an introvert and not knowing and not being able to judge how I was going to be received, right? Mm-hmm. Teaching was actually quite difficult because I didn't know how to be around kids.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't naturally inclined to be around young children, and the ones that I was teaching were 4 and 5 years old. Mm. So it was really difficult. And then on top of that, you're teaching ESL. So you're teaching all kinds of subjects in an ESL form. And a lot of them are not understanding what you're saying. So they don't get your nuances. They don't get your, you know, your humor. They don't get, you know, the direction you're taking. And it's rote memory. So even if you wanted to do dialogue or storytelling or fun or being creative, that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So it was very difficult to initiate myself as a teacher, right? Yeah. And I failed a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not knowing if this was the right thing or the right call, but eventually something clicked, like something just kind of made sense. Mm. And I think it was this natural sensation that even inside of me, you need to drop whatever this adulthood you have, whatever this like form you are in, you need to drop it and start to engage with the beings that you are sitting with, right? Mm. Like who you are talking to, who you're trying to teach so that they can experience something that, you know, their parents and their grandparents are paying for, but experience it in a well way, right? In a good way, in a positive way, right? That affects them in a positive way. So it's not just, you know, learn and move on.
Yeah.
But more of an effectual way where they can remember these things, and it's life changing. And actually a lot of those students are still contacting me today and letting me know what's going on with their lives and how much, you know, my classroom, the classrooms that they were engaged with me, really affected their perspective in life.
That's
right?
Cool.
So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. When did you realize that? When did you realize to kind of drop that adult thing and just get into it?
I think it was after my first year.
Yeah, you kind of got your legs under you and...
Yeah, I became less nervous. I became less inhibited and just been like, okay, like something's got to give here, right? Mm-hmm. And I just don't know exactly what that is. And then I just started to have fun, right? I started to have fun and started to explore this like world that, you know, all children have is this natural instinct to absorb things, right? Mm-hmm. And like, how do they absorb? Where does this absorption come from? How does that transform tomorrow and the week later? You know, how do they learn from this moment to this moment to this moment and without skipping these phases? So it became kind of almost like a science for me too, right? So I was like developing this idea of like, okay, so here's stage one. And then going to stage two and then stage three. And like, how do we get there in the most, you know, beneficial way for myself and for what the school's expectations, because obviously they have them, and then their parents' expectations. And like, so there was a lot of like key components to all of this, right? So that became more of a science to me. I'm like, I know. And then we worked on it. I'm like, okay, this one worked. So we're going to keep doing what's working and then improve on that. Yep. So it just became something that was exciting for me to explore and expand on and then to elevate and evolve with, right? And it was pretty fun. I mean, like at the end of it, I had such great rapport with, you know, the school, the parents and the kids that one of my classrooms, and I had a great, you know, co-teacher with me, Mandarin co-teacher with me, and we became very good friends. And we all went to Japan. for a couple of weeks. So we went to Disney World, and which was at that point, I'm like, no, I can't stand Disney. Like, I mean, I still can't. But oddly enough, as soon as I saw Mickey Mouse, I cried. Like, so this is like something that was very childlike for me growing up, right? Like there was some sort of connection for me in Disney World. And as much as I was resisting being in, you know, Japan's Disneyland, I was just like, oh, wow, that really affected my inner child here, you know, psychology. and all the kids were just like, not just laughing, but hugging me. And just, I don't know, they saw something that was pretty magical.
That was an experience.
Yeah, it was an experience. So yeah, it was a really nice time. It was a really nice way to actually end my time in Taiwan. And
what else was, not knowing anything about the culture or anything, like anything. So what's happening during those 7 years? Like, are you like fully engaged? Are you like, does it feel like you did the right thing and you're just kind of like all in on that experience?
I think it was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
It was, you know, this was enjoyable. This isn't enjoyable. I missed home a lot, so I didn't really necessarily feel like that was my home. But I had a great home in the mountains. I had a lot of, you know, crazy experiences and great experiences. And it was just really simple to live there too. And, I mean, to explore as well was really nice. It was my first time. I got a motorcycle for the first time.
Oh, cool.
So that was fun, you know?
Yes.
And my mechanic was the one, and he's like, so, okay, here you go, take it home. And I had to drive through the core of Taipei to get home. And,
what,
you know,
what kind of bike was it?
It looks like a Triumph.
Okay.
So it's called a Honda Wolf.
Okay. Like 400 cc's, 500 cc's.
It was 250.
Okay.
So really small.
But, yep.
You know.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. Her name was Tiger, and she was orange and brown and was just gorgeous. I wish I could have brought her back home with me.
Right through the middle of Taipei.
Right through the middle of the Taipei. And he's like, so you don't know how to ride a motorcycle? And he's like, no, actually, I've been riding scooters and I, you know, had some dirt bike experience, but nothing like this, driving through millions of people on a motorcycle that you're just kind of getting to know with gears going up
like
and down,
chaos.
Right? And it was actually, but somehow I made it work. And, you know, when I was driving home, it wasn't as busy. So I just kind of, you know, figured things out that way. And taking it up the mountain was probably the scariest part because you're like, I don't know when you're going to quit. But
such a cool way to experience a country.
It was.
I've had a bike since I was almost 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could have a bike again, but I have greater responsibilities now that I have to. To eye roll because I love my responsibilities, but I do miss riding.
It's just, it's different, especially in different places. You just, it just feels like you're in it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no barriers around you and you just kind of.
You just melt into it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I came back and I got a Honda Shadow. It was a 750 Honda Shadow.
Anyway.
Because my driver's license expired while I was here, but they had a huge blackout in Ontario. And by the time I had to get my driver's license renewed, nothing was working. So it was such a weird, like, but I have to go. Like, I can't stay here. I have to go. My plane ticket's set, right? So I ended up expiring. And by the time I came back, I had to do the test again.
And they said,
if you really want to be mobile, go ahead and get your motorcycle license. So I'm like, okay. So you have to take a driver's license, but you don't have to take a motorcycle test for this, right? So anyway, it worked out and I got myself a 750, which was fun. It was a little bit too big for me. Like I kind of really like the more narrow bodied type motorcycle.
Yep.
Not rockets or anything like that.
What year was that first bike or the Shadow? Remember?
Oh God, years I wouldn't remember.
So,
I think at that time I was 25 going 26.
And what year was the bike? Do you remember that?
No, because it was all pieced together.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my first bike was an 89 750 Virago.
Oh my gosh.
So the same thing as a Shadow, right?
Yeah.
Just the Yamaha's version of a Shadow?
Yeah.
So yeah, so I know exactly what you're talking
okay.
about.
Okay.
Yeah. So what happens after Disneyland?
After that, I came back home. I came directly back here so I can finish up my school in social work. And
like you knew you had to?
Yeah, I had to. This was it. Like 7 years was tops and then everything else would have been obsolete. So you better come back and you better finish this up, right?
Okay.
So I did.
So you had to.
So I had to. And which was fine, but it was really difficult to transition. I experienced more culture shock coming back than I did being there.
What was it? Just like the
7 years missing.
Yeah.
And 7 years missing means you don't have a resume. So even to get a normal coffee shop job was difficult. Couldn't even get a job doing that. So I had to work for friends, like under the table for some cash. And eventually I finally got my practicum, which was working with the Chinese Community Association down in Chinatown. And that led to a job. So it was all of these things that was kind of like, okay, so these things aren't working and you're in school, you got to do a practicum and they're going to hire you. And then I, it just went from that point onwards. And I distinctly remember, finishing up this year, and I didn't know anything about PowerPoint or anything. Like, things changed. Like, you know, when I left, nobody had a cell phone. When I came back, everybody was having a cell phone, right? Mm. So it was different. I mean, in Taiwan, everybody has a cell phone. So it wasn't a big difference there. But coming back, it was just like, okay, so things have changed greatly. You need PowerPoints now, apparently. You need to be more technically inclined to finish up your school and social work. It's not just, group work anymore.
That is a big, like that 7 year gap.
Yeah, it's a big chunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't realize like how much change happens when you're completely removed and out of it, right? So it took a little while to adapt to all of that. And even just communicating with people, nobody was interested in the stories that I had. Nobody wanted to know where I was. Like, it was so weird. And then, all your friends are basically gone, or they've moved on, or they got married, or they're not interested anymore, or you're not interested anymore. So things change, right?
Yeah.
It was actually quite lonely. It was a very difficult transition. So I just put a lot of weight into my work in this practicum. And I had one professor come out, and she did the practicum overseas. Like, so she was just kind of gauging what was going on in this job. And she looks at me at the end of the time that, she was evaluating what was going on. She's like, you shouldn't be inside an organization. You should be an organization. Mm. So that kind of like stuck with me. It was like kind of a weird planting seed.
It's a heavy statement.
Yeah, it was a big seed. It was like, okay, well, that's really fabulous. That was quite a compliment. Thank you. Like, she was actually a professor that I felt nervous around. So, intimidated by, right? Mm-hmm. But so it was great to hear that kind of feedback from her when she said that. But of course, I wasn't ambitious enough to think of how does that look, right? How do we explore this a little bit more? And
do you think it was because you... Like, what do you think that barrier was? Just you weren't wired that way, or you just couldn't see the potential, or just...
A belief in yourself. Mm. That fundamental belief in yourself, right? Self-esteem, self-confidence, like none of that stuff actually existed to an extreme where, some Leos have it and some Leos just don't. They struggle a little bit with it, right? Mm-hmm. Not that I'm all into astrology or anything, but... birth signs and stuff, but like, these natural born qualities were not something that was natural to me. I was way too nervous a lot of the times. I was too afraid to take risks and yet, and adventures and journeys. And yet this is something that I see that I have done. And, I just kind of like stepped into them without being programmed into them or thinking about them or anything. It was just like step by step by step. Mm-hmm. I didn't take anything that she said and thought to myself, how do I do this? That's such a great idea. It was just like, that was such a nice compliment and I appreciated it.
It's interesting how you can go back there quickly.
Yeah.
After all these years, you can just like go back to that moment.
And it was very, it was distinctual, right? Mm-hmm. So it was, now that I'm examining the storyline with you, it's like, wow, that was quite a pivotal moment, I think, for me, and there have been these like weird little drops along the way of my adventures that, suggested the new path to take and then the new path to take, because that was a really strong suggestion, right? Like, again, another seed planted. I mean, I remember one time when I was in Belize and we were listening to a drumming circle, and it was in the middle of the night, but it was late at night. And I was right on the beach where I was living. And I was just sitting there with the moon and the stars and the waves coming crashing in and sinking my feet into the sand. And somebody walked up behind me, and she was a travel writer for one of the Lonely Planet type travel magazines and stuff like that. And she's like, I saw you here a little while ago. I just came back and I just felt like I needed to tell you that, you have pieces of yourself scattered all over the place. Like, your soul is scattered in all kinds of different places. And I think your next you know, your next adventure is going to be working with kids. Hmm. Like, hey, I don't like, you know, I'm not a kid person. Hmm. I'm barely an adult person, right? Like, I don't even know how to exist in this world that mm-hmm. I'm in. So I found that kind of, again,
that's like
a big, like, where is that coming from? Mm-hmm. You know? And then I never saw this person again. Mm-hmm. Next day, this person was gone and moving on and, like, you know, doing the travel writing and everything. So it was just such a weird, random moment. And I think things like that just are those, it's those threads that pull your quilt together, right? Yeah. Like your blankets. And, mm-hmm. and it's such a crazy world that, you know, things like this can be just mm-hmm. scattered all over the place. And then it develops into something, yeah. right? So I think that was part of the development, was something that she said there.
But like, it's just a moment. She says something and just you sit with it.
15-second moment. Yeah.
And then yeah. and then you sit with it and move on and continue on your path. And what, you know.
Yep.
Who knows how long later it's like, yeah. oh.
oh, I see how that happened. Oh, here okay, here we go. Now it's connected, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that obviously connects later on into what I'm doing now. Yep. But
so after the teacher says that, you kind of finish your program?
Yeah, I finished the program. Great, you know, graduated.
And feel okay about it? You feel like you're in the right spot?
Yeah, like social work? Like it was like, okay, so this is, you know.
This is what I got.
Yeah, it was still just kind of something wasn't really developing for me that felt a big connection to it. Yeah. But I did my job and eventually it got to a point where I'm like, I'm not really inclined to do this anymore. I remember one time again, like coming down into Chinatown, I was crossing the bridge and they were having an extreme issue with graffiti and vandalism. And they were struggling with what kind of like, what can we do to prevent these things from happening in our community? Because it's like, you know, it's kind of ruining, I guess, the culture and the people being down here. It looks a little bit more garbagey and trashy. Things like this were, you know, being explored on the table, right? So yep. I was presented with an opportunity to maybe develop an idea for a program to combat a lot of this and to entice people to come into Chinatown. And I was crossing the bridge, and one day, that morning when I was crossing the bridge, it was early, and all I could hear was, paint Chinatown. And it was just this, paint Chinatown. And it developed into a project that, for my end of it, developed 7 murals. And from different mediums and different artists, and it all depicted parts of the Asian culture, like the Chinese and Taiwanese culture, even though it's mostly Cantonese and Chinese in Chinatown, of course, but there is a little bit of Taiwanese in there as well, Mandarin. And many of these murals provided a storyline of, you know, people to learn more about an Eastern version, like culture, right? Yep. So it was something pretty phenomenal that I was experiencing. And it took, again, like multiple artists and different visions and different storylines. I think I worked with close to about 1,200 people.
Wow.
You know, developing these. And the murals were mostly painted by community members.
Cool.
So, or put together because we did a big tile mural and stuff like that too. So, yeah, it was pretty, excellent. And then after that, I was like, no. I don't want to do this anymore. I started doing dog walking. So like, it was so different.
Like random?
So random.
And why? Like after you have an experience like that, you know, that's like to help put all these installations in, yeah. work with the community, build something very cool.
Yeah.
Were you just, done? Like it just gave you what you needed and yeah. you're like, okay, I'm
done
next.
Here. No need to force anything more here. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when everything just feels like it's going to fall into place, but yeah. then there's these moments where like, this is a round peg in a square hole. Like yeah. you're forcing something here. It doesn't feel, even if you don't even have the capacity to understand that that's what it is, but you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was just like, this is enough. Mm-hmm. I'm not as happy right now. Mm-hmm. So what needs to happen next?
I'm pretty quick Like when you realize that, when your like inner monologue starts happening, are you quick to react to it?
No, you know, it's it plays out. Yeah, it plays out, you know, it becomes more of a struggle to a point where it's like, if you don't listen, there's going to be a 2x4 that's going to happen here soon, right? So, and I don't think like particularly, when I was in Taiwan, I got really engaged with animal rescue, like catch and release and stuff with the dogs because they're just, and cats because they're just horrendously treated there. And brought back a couple of my rescued puppies, right? So I had...
So it was you'd planted the seed about...
Yeah, like I started to feel a little bit more responsible and, you know, I was responsible to something other than myself. And so with my two dogs, Kafka and Happy, and I was like, well, why not just be a dog walker? Because you enjoy them. It turns out I did not enjoy dog walking. And it wasn't because of the dogs at all. It's a tough arena.
Yeah. So you spun up your own business and...
Yeah, started up my own business and didn't really enjoy that too much either. But I shared the business with somebody else. And then I went, once that was a little bit more functional for that other person, I went and started working again in my career. So I started working with special needs in my career. But at that time... I moved from inner city to the country west of Carstairs.
Okay.
So we had, a rental house, and it was 160 acres that we could use, but I fenced in 2 acres for, you know, a doggy playground and sleepovers and stuff. So we had homestays and stuff, right? So
how long was the dog business operational for?
I think it was 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the whole time were you... did you realize quickly that it wasn't for you?
It was pretty stressful.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't as relaxing as somebody might think it would. I think people are stellar at it, like, and I think they really enjoy things like this, but...
I'd be stressed.
I was so stressed. Mm-hmm. I was always stressed out. Like, where are the dogs? They're all off leash and I don't understand these dogs and they're coming into our pack and pack mentality. And like, you know, it's difficult to be all over the place watching, right? Yeah. So that's why I kind of like to centralized it and brought it to my home instead and had a big, you know, play park for them and started to monitor them with home-based like sleepovers, which everybody loved and wanted because they weren't so keen on kennels anymore.
Yep.
But that was stressful. Like there's no sleep, you know, there's no sleep and there's no getting away because at some point somebody needs you and you can't really take a vacation. It was pretty stressful. So I wasn't really into that either. I mean, I love the dogs.
It's everything else that goes with it.
Lots of good friends with canines, but it was very difficult. And so I guess maybe that's why I was just like, okay, I'm going to pass this on.
Yep.
You know, you're quite capable. And I'm going to move back into the career that I wanted to develop.
Just because you were thinking like, just try again, like try something, a different twist on the idea?
I was really, I don't know. I think at that time in my life, I really wanted to be someplace. Like I wanted the house. I wanted the family. I wanted the things that I wasn't experiencing or didn't have, you know? And I think money played a huge role in that, played a crucial role in that.
Yeah.
I had a hard time taking money even from the business, from the dog business, because I was like, you know, it feels weird because I really love the dogs and then I want to, you know, and then it became such a huge, like convoluted, like issue for me. And I was like, why am I struggling with this? My mom was a single mom and we grew up in, you know, poverty level. She did the best she could with us, right? And worked her butt off all the time. And my dad was a toy guy. Like he left when we were 3 and he moved out and he didn't want anything to do with support or anything like that, right? So he just, lots of money come to him and, you know, toys and land and houses on lakes and things like this. So two separate worlds. Different. And I think both of them kind of collided for me, right? Like, I don't want to be here and I don't want to be here, but money played a huge role for, you know, where I thought I needed to be.
Was that your own idea or was it like kind of like seeing your peers moving along their line of like starting families, buying things?
And I think at that point there was a little bit of pressure, you know, like my age and
you're just kind of looking at people who are like, am I supposed to do that? Is that what the next move is?
Yeah, like that looks really good and sweet. Maybe I should be doing that, right?
No.
Maybe I should have kids. Maybe I should be married. Maybe I should have that house and everything is, you know, looks smooth and uncomplicated, but, you know, obviously we know it's not. So, but it's the picture, you know, it's that like, that pressure that you know, let's ease into our older years, right? Yeah. But that's not the truth of it, right? Yeah. It took me a little while to figure that out. But
it doesn't get, and it doesn't get talked about that much.
No. And I think we need to be a little bit more realistic, right? Mm. With, you know, these fantasies. And I think that's where I was living in, is just like, I want that fantasy so bad that it was depressing. You know, it was really depressing for me. And it was just like, how come I'm not getting there? How come I'm paying this much rent and I'm not making this much money? And there's this business that's booming, but there's no money. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it just kept, like, there was this tug, you know, this push-pull, and where was it going? So I think that's probably why I wanted to get back into working in my career job, right? Because there was more of a steady income. Mm-hmm. It might look a little bit more, you know, streamlined, right? Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case either. So what do you learn later on? Things became, I was, you know, watching this, I was developing this, and I got this job. I was working in Olds, working in a special needs group home with really high reactive needs, and learned that I was honestly just a glorified babysitter. So nothing that I wanted to try to implement was actually being received well by the organizations, right? And a lot of the times it was stumped by, well, we only have this and this much money.
Yeah.
Or we need to be a little bit more realistic with potential. And I'm like, what is that? Like, be more realistic with potential for individuals that need and require the space to explore who they are and what they're good at, but we want to not give that to them. We just want to guide them and manipulate them into these little spaces and places just to kind of see if they can get a job or, you know, get them more functional in society and things like this. Like, it just felt so manufactured. And it was a little bit disheartening. It just really kind of like bothered me so much. Yeah. And again, just having those moments where you're like, but I think that they would do really well in these areas. Like, why can't we just try that? And like, no, money, kilometers, mileage, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, this is sucking. While this was all happening, other things started to plant seeds. Mm. And, you know, I'm frustrated and I'm just hitting a brick wall constantly. I'm really unhappy. You know, I feel like I'm constantly agitated with, like, why is it that I can see this, but I can't get there? And I don't know exactly what needs to happen for me to get there, to feel like I'm doing something, right? Like, here on purpose, right? You're struggling, right? Mm-hmm. And I came across a newspaper, which happens to only go out to rural Alberta.
How old are you right now, by the way?
At this current moment in my body?
No, sorry, in the story.
My inner child says. At this point, I believe there's a big blur in this timeline. So I think at this point I was 33, 34-ish? I don't know. That might be...
ish. Early 30s?
Mid-30s?
Okay.
Yeah, maybe. So weird how parts of your life just becomes like such a blur that you're having no idea, like no concept how old you are, because so many things are happening at one time, right? And and it's just so weird. Like I know when a certain stage of my life started, and I know, you know, the years that had followed that, but what happened before this, no idea. It's a big mix-up. It's a big salad bowl with radishes.
Oh, God.
Right? Although they do make a good filler in summertime. So during all of this is happening, and I'm not entirely sure why this is happening and why we're hitting so many roadblocks and why I feel like I'm just not being utilized in a way that I could be. Like, I could do very well in this home, and it's just everything is like, nope, this is what you do. This is what you do. And I'm like, okay, like, I guess I felt I was just there to collect a paycheck and do the best I could, you know? Mm-hmm. But anyway, this article came across in this newspaper, and it was for a very large horse rescue, and they were just like, you know, talking about what they were doing, and it just seemed really kind of, I was inclined to go and visit them. I was like, I'm not a horse person, but I wanted to go out and see what they were doing.
Something pulled at you.
Something was pulling at me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went, and I think it was at that time I was with my mom. I'm not entirely sure. And we explored, and the lady who introduced us to everything that she was doing. You know, I was asking some really important questions. And I was vegetarian, you know, so I was vegetarian since I was 15 after doing a big social studies paper on factory farming. And the only information out there was PETA. And it just, like, that's it. Everything was off the table. I was even vegan for a little while, but we didn't have a lot of resources then with my mom and, you know, her not knowing. But she was you know, very supportive of it. So, you know, we just went into, after realizing we couldn't go strictly into vegan because we were not educated enough right now, right? You need to be a little bit, you're active, you need to be more healthy, you know, things like this. Give me some time. So I was vegetarian since I was 15. Can you hear that?
No.
Okay.
Are you grumbling?
Yeah, my stomach just went, whoa.
Well, you're talking my language.
Oh, here we go. So I was aware of animal welfare and the deplorable conditions, but not, I don't know if it meant something yet. You know, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't hitting the inner core of me, my value system yet. Although I made the decision, it just didn't hit me the way this hit me, right? And, you know, I asked her, I think, like, I don't understand why you exist. Like, I was gobsmacked. I'm like, why do you exist? I don't get it. Like, maybe this was the first time I saw or been aware of a sanctuary or a rescue. And she's like, animals need a place to go for safety. And, you know, this is what we do here. We bring animals in and we care for them and we heal them and we adopt them out because there was a horse rescue. So that's generally what they would do.
Yep.
Rehabilitate and then adopt them out. And I was, again, like, just, I think I was just like absorbing or, you know, dialing into something that I just never even experienced before. Like, I don't understand why a horse rescue needs to exist. Mm-hmm. It's Alberta. Right? For like, everybody loves horses here. They should be retired. We shouldn't have this problem. It shouldn't be, you know, a failure to our equine friends. And eventually I met a couple of their farm friends too, like farm animals, not just equines. And I'm like, I don't get it. I don't know why I wasn't absorbing why this was necessary, but I was just hitting this wall of like, confusion, right? And after that, everything just kind of transformed and seeds started to plant themselves. And I'm like, I want to do more of these things. And they dropped with the community that I was working with the organization that I was working with, they did a lot of equine therapy. And then I started to realize like, okay, well, obviously horses are great for therapy, but so are these animals. And I was like, why doesn't this stuff exist? So I started to do some research online and came across like a number of rescues and sanctuaries in the States. Gentle Barn being one of them. And she was like me, she was a social worker and got into, you know, saving and rescuing animals and then working with groups of individuals that really needed to hear the animal stories and build on their resilience and triumphs and strengths. And, you know, and it really helped develop people's minds and what their potential was. I'm like, oh my God, this is what I need to do. And that was it. It was just like this explosion that happened, right?
Did you go see her, this person? Or was it like just...
No, I just read her book and I just kind of followed her.
You're in.
Yeah. It was just, and then I just started to research a little bit more as time went on. And I remember working and I had a friend that I worked with. He was doing more... He would work with the individuals and try to build things with them, right? So he had a good sense of like, you know, step one, step two, step three type of mentality, right? Yep. And he's like, if this is something that you really want to do, then you need to have a like an aspect, like a goal, an intention. And he's like, what is that? Like, what does it look like? How are you even going to do it? Like, you know, how is this going to develop? Like, what kind of stuff do you want to implement inside of this goal? Like, you know, all of these things.
And big questions,
important questions, right? So I really hand it to him because he helped me do that for a year.
Cool.
To develop this idea, right? And this just guide that and like see it as a goal and see it as an intention. I even had to, you know, define what intention meant to me and define what integrity, like I latched on to these words. Like it was just like this you know, satiable, edible moment for me. It was just like, okay, I want to embody integrity. I want to, and I'm not, right? I want, like, these core values started to really just kind of, like I said, they were targeted, right? By this one moment being at this horse rescue. And it was just like, there's something. Oh my God, this hurts. You know, it was painful because it's like you realize that you haven't been living your life in alignment. So even that word was something that I had to develop a definition for myself. What does alignment even mean? How does alignment even exist, you know, for individuals, and how does it exist for me? And so,
how'd you work through these ideas? Like,
painfully,
introspectively, like just you, like in your head and writing things down.
In my head, and just journaling. Lots of these things were
conversations, you know, like with select people, or was it just,
I didn't have a lot of people to talk to at that time. So I was pretty isolated, and, you know, nothing wrong with, you know, smaller communities, but it's that type of communication or conversation doesn't really exist. Like those deeper in-depth conversations don't really exist. You know, you get a certain point and then it doesn't go too far. Right. But, you know, there's sometimes where I felt like there was uplifting or, you know, conversations that were proportional to where I wanted to head, like, oh, enlightening, right? Okay, that was really good. It was such a good feeling coming out of it. But for the most of this time of development and introspection, I was really sad. I was very, very sad. And, no, I was sad that I felt that I was missing something for such a big part of my life. And then now I don't know how to develop this something. And so I'm not entirely sure if I'm in the right place to develop this stuff, or, you know, do I even have the money to develop this kind of stuff? Like all these things were just kind of flashing inside of my brain. It actually got to a point, it got to a head for me that I was, you know, in my garden. And the house that I was renting was so dilapidated. It was single panes, holes in the wall. The sewage system exploded in the basement and nobody did anything about it. So in the springtime, it would just, fester with the smell and this. And that's what I honestly thought I deserved. Like, you know, you see your house and you're like, okay, this is all I deserve. Like, you don't even think about anything outside of this. Like, you can't imagine anything outside of what you're experiencing right now, right? Because like you're just in this slosh of, I don't even know how to develop where I am right now. I don't even know who I am. But I was in this garden, and I remember this moment because it was pretty much like the pivotal moment for me in transition. And I just lost it. And I'm like, I know I have a purpose. I don't know what that purpose is, and it's killing me not to get there. And so I just presented two questions. Either you put me into service and give me my purpose, or you take me out so that there's room for somebody else who can do it. Like, it was just that momentous for me. It was just like, I don't want to keep doing what I'm doing, so help me. You know, and and I'm not religious, but I do believe in something greater than myself. I do have faith in the universe, and you know, it has shown me many things to not believe in it, right? So it was one of those things that I'm just like, okay, I need to talk to you because I have nobody else to talk to. And I feel like you're the only one who's going to pretty much present all of these things that I need to be presented with to do something different with, because I am struggling. And nobody should struggle that much, right? Like, you feel like you get to that wall. You're like, I can't climb this wall unless you ask for help. So it started to present itself, and these seeds started to drop, and they were being nurtured along the way without really kind of having any idea why. But I went back to this horse rescue. I forced myself as an intern on them. They were not prepared for that. And
for your energy?
Yeah, right. I'm like, I need to develop something here, and this is what I think it needs to look like. And so I brought in all of the experience that I had as a social worker, and grants and program development and things like this, like all these kind of expertise. And I'm like, I want this to happen. You have this already, but you don't have this. And functionally, we can probably combine these efforts and grow this you know, the space. Mm-hmm. And grants become a little bit more easier too, because you're working with community and you're mm-hmm. doing more community endeavors and you're helping people along the way. And that's something that I wanted to amalgamate and bring my two, I guess, like passions together. I want to help, mm-hmm. innately I want to help animals, and innately I want to help people find their truest potential, right? Like their freedom, their love for a brief moment, right? Mm-hmm. Their passion for the brief moment, whatever it might be. It was just like something that I felt like, let's combine these two. So we worked, I worked as an intern with them for 6 months. They were only about maybe 30 to 40 minutes away from where I lived. So it was pretty easy to, yep. the commute there. And at the same time, I worked with the organization with the individuals with special needs. And
you were working.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
There was a lot going on. So mm-hmm. that's probably why I was a big blur. I'm
yeah.
like, I
yeah, for sure.
Not entirely sure what all happened there, you know, but it was transformational. And eventually the, you know, the internship came to an end, and we were looking at, you know, how is this going to work, you know, as the, this entity and this entity. And then like we both understood that there was something that wasn't going to align with yeah. that. So after that, I guess, I'm lost for the word.
Journey, moment, experience.
Experience, maybe. I think it was just like that. It's kind of like, okay, we got through that moment. We yeah. we made it this far, but now it's time to venture. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really particularly ready for venturing because it's that belief system of myself, right? Still lacking confidence, still lacking self-esteem.
Still there still.
Still the same person with issues, you know, mm-hmm. anxiety issues and you know, all of these things that kind of prevent us from taking those great leaps, right? Yeah. Or believing in those great leaps. Like, you're okay. You got mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I took that big book that I was working with the individual that worked with me. All the steps, and I looked at how to start your own farm animal sanctuary. There's a PDF from Farm Sanctuary in the States, who I absolutely adore and who have inspired me greatly mm-hmm. along the way. Mm-hmm. And I tried to emulate, you know, the Alice Sanctuary from Farm Sanctuary. Love Jean Bauer. And they had a PDF on what you need to start a successful farm animal sanctuary, right? And wow. so... it was great because I just studied it like it was a little mini Bible, right? Unfortunately, it's nothing with what I had. I had to look at this and go, well, that's dreamy, but this is what I've got. You know, how do I make that work? And there's the saying, like, you work with what you got, right? You start where you are, you work with what you have, and, you know, it goes from there, right? Didn't have a dime to my name. And as a single social worker person, all banks would laugh at you if you even went in there and thought about
yeah.
buying yourself an acreage or getting a mortgage in any way, right? Mm-hmm. But I just, again, took that leap and got a phone call. And they said, are you ready for your first rescue? And I'm like, yes, okay. Yeah. Like, you know, this is, let me think for a second. Talked to my landlord at that time. He's like, you know, if you want to start here, then go ahead. So I was like, crazy odd, but let's do it.
Okay.
He was supportive to a degree, but I think in a mocking degree. Like, it was more like, you're going to fail. You know, let's just see how this works, right? You know nothing. So I think sometimes when I'm presented with that, you do it twice and you take a lot of photos while you're doing it, you know, to prove that you can in a way. Like, there's that stubbornness that happens, right? That perseverance, that determination. Like, I'm sorry, did you tell me I can't do this? Well,
watch.
Let's just see. So ended up being a 6-week-old piglet who was, I guess, purchased from Kijiji for 24 hours of entertainment and surrendered to the Humane Society, thankfully. And they needed a home for this piglet, and the rescue that I was working with didn't have that space for them. So they asked if I could. And that was it. That was Oliver. And that's when you knew. I'm like, okay, that's 15 years commitment, right? Like, that's when you go from paper to this is now going to be your new norm. This is now going to be your reality. Mm-hmm. And this is how you need to show up in the world around you now. Like, you need to figure this out. And this is where it's going to begin.
So when Oliver showed up, did you know? Did you know that this is like, this is it? This is, everything's going to change right now? Did you have to sit with it for a little bit, or you knew?
I did sit with it for, I think, at least 24 hours. Yeah. I sat with it and just thought about it. And like, are you ready?
Do I got this?
Is this something that you know, it was scary, right? Because it's like major commitment and big change for your life. And I still was working full time. So part of this dog business was still in existence too at that time. So it was a crazy time, but I felt like,
did it feel like controlled chaos, or was it just, you didn't even think about it, you're just moving?
I think it was just moving.
Yeah.
I think there was just so many moving parts to this. You're just like, okay, this is a movement. And either I say yes or I say no. But after this amount of time of thinking, like, you need to make your decision. Mm-hmm. And the decision was a fairly easy decision after thinking about it. Because you're like, okay, let's do this. Let's do this. Like, you're ready for this responsibility.
So what happens when you say that? When you say that to yourself, what starts to happen?
I think I started crying.
Yeah.
Because you knew that at that moment, your life is about to change in ways that you might not even understand how it's going to change. Like, there's no way you can imagine what your life looks like after this moment. This pivotal start, you know? And it wasn't just like, you're bringing in a rescue because you love animals. This was like, you are bringing in a rescue. This is 15 years of commitment. And this is now going to be your organization. So now you got to develop an organization out of this. A not-for-profit comes from that. You got to get people involved. You got to have this momentum that you've been writing about for so long with goals and a checklist, you know, to keep yourself like responsible for every moving part that's about to happen. And like, you just knew like that was it. Like, your life looks so different after you make that one decision, right? Like, it just, everything you once knew no longer exists. Doesn't exist anymore.
And is that comforting and frightening?
Yeah. Yeah, it was new. I felt like it was definitely on purpose. So there was a sense of like floating into this new world. But it's hard because you're grieving your old world now, right? Like, there's a grief process that you're like, my old world isn't going to exist, even though you're consciously, you don't even know that. You're just experiencing all of these emotions at once, like a tornado, right? And, and you gotta, you know, bless them, and they're chaotic, but they're powerful. And it was just crazy at the same time. I was just like, it was nuts. It was just, but in nothing, there was no part of me that said, you're making a mistake. No part of me said, you're gonna regret this. No part of me said that this was definitely not the route to take. Like, every part of me was screaming, you need to jump off this cliff now. Now. You don't have, there isn't, you know, next. It's now. Like, it's going to happen. Because if you don't take this, the next time something like this presents themselves or presents itself, or like an animal's in need, you're going to not be brave enough.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be something that's like, oh, well, you know, I wasn't brave enough here. I'm not going to be brave enough here either. And this is going to perpetuate itself, right? So I felt like there was this cliff of just, you need to go, you just need to jump. You need to free fall. And I don't know what's at the end of it.
Which is...
it's just, yeah.
Especially when you've been looking for something for a long time and then...
Is this it? Is this the purpose?
That's not a blueprint many people follow. No. So
it was definitely not a dream.
Yeah, and you can't really point... There's not many points of reference. You're like, oh, that there's people around in my world that are doing these things. They're kind of distant.
I didn't have a lot of experiences. I didn't know a lot of people running sanctuaries. I didn't really like work at sanctuaries, you know, like or large animal rescues until I started interning, so I could learn a lot more about you know, the things that go into, because that is absolutely vital. You know, you can't just. I mean, now lots of people are like, "You're doing my dream job." I'm like, there are really incredible, beautiful moments about sanctuary and doing these things, but this by no means is dreamy, you know? Like, this is hard work, and you don't get to walk away from it at any given point, even when you really want to, and your whole body's screaming, please just quit, please just stop for a second, you know? And you can't, right? You have to keep going. You have to keep pushing. You have to keep moving through these really sometimes terrible and horrible things happen, you know, and you got to keep pushing through that. And you feel really uncertain about what it's going to look like on the next day, but you have to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of things, you know, during the pandemic, that was hard. The hustle every single day and everything kept on changing for years and you're struggling with finding the finances to keep going. And like, how do you do that when you can't even bring people out and you have to be super creative all the time and evolve and expand and then get disappointed because you can't do it anymore? Or, you know, like there's threats involved to that too, right? Vaccinated versus unvaccinated, all of these things, people changed. And it was hard to work with people again. And so.
Dreamy.
Not dreamy, right? And the reality of it is that you will experience good and bad in one moment. Like you'll experience grief and joy in one moment. And not a lot of people can compute that. Not a lot of people can sustain that day in and day out, right? So it's beautiful. And what's presented when people come out to experience the lives and the stories of, you know, the residents that live with us. It's a great, fulfilling, loving, passionate, compassionate moment. But the day-to-day it's really hard. So have to remind people of that, right? You need to be committed to this. If this is what you want to do, you don't get to give up because those animals are going to depend on you for the rest of their lives. So you better make sure that you're ready for that commitment.
Which is, that's heavy.
Yeah.
That's a
there's a weight to that, you know, and then you need to know if there's going to be a succession plan, like, you know, all these things kind of go into play at all of these things, right? So you don't get to retire from this.
No.
So
for when Oliver shows up
yep.
to where you are today,
yep,
wildly different at scale, at like initiatives, at like all of it.
Oh yeah.
What were your pivotal moments over these times? Like there's been seeds planted along the way that have kind of steered you down directions. Was there moments, or has it just been this like steady momentum that's been pushing you forward?
I think there has been this steady momentum for sure. I mean, we left that, you know, in 2 years, you know, during the 2 years that I was working full time, I brought in a lot of my clients that would come in and they would establish, they would confirm that this was the right move, you know, seeing how they experience the animals and you know, what they experienced their world on a regular basis and then what they were experiencing here with the residents that were with, you know, the sanctuary at that time.
Yeah.
Very, very small at that point. And it was just like really affirming. I was just like, okay, this is in the right direction. We're going in the right direction here. I had to make a moment where it's like, I have to quit my jobs because I can't run this organization and get to the place where this is the book, thy book says, I want to be here, you know, at a certain point. And so I started asking around and, you know, I had one supporter who would regularly donate hay because her animals wouldn't eat the hay and she was just a regular donator. And so I reached out to her and asked her if she knew of any place that would just be like bare land. I'll start from scratch and I'll lease to own it. You know, I'll do whatever I can just to make this work, you know? And she offered her space. I was like, what? She's like, well, you know, I'm not using it anymore. There's 118 acres here. There's a bunch of barns. I have a couple of animals. Why don't you just come out? Why don't you just check it out? Assess out this, you know, and see if it works for you. And I'm like, what? So, you know, that kind of stuff is scary because I'm not used to asking for help.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the first 2 years I worked, so I was just kind of maintaining the sanctuary on my own anyway, with few hay donations here and there, right? So
crazy.
It was just, you know, reaching out and expanding was just, again, just another level up, right? Just, and you get used to asking for help and it's good because when it's right, you receive that help, right? Yeah. And so this was one of those moments. And that took me from working the full time and living in this really hectic, dilapidated home life. And my landlord, like, you know, good luck, right? Like, it's gonna work. And moving here, and it came with its own certain issues too, of course. Like it was it's a very beautiful and pristine space. And so to maintain that level, that standard was a lot of effort, a lot of energy. Still not having a single day off for, you know, 2 years at least for the sanctuary beginning, and then years before that with the business and working and interning, all these other things. Mm-hmm. So I was exhausted mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Like, it was exhausting. But we made it work. And, you know, went through a lot of highs, a lot of lows. And I think that was like a big pivotal moment for the sanctuary for me, because when people started to come out, they were saying like how incredibly magical the space was, right? Mm. And you can tell it too with the individuals that were living with us, like our residents that were living with us, like it really changed them as well. Like they were in a very safe space. Like it wasn't, you know, I was there a lot. So I went from somebody who felt the need to always collect that paycheck, that money. Money is going to change the world. You got to get that money, right? Yeah. And I was like, okay, if I got the money, everything's going to change my life. I went from that to a full-time volunteer. No money, no income, and happy. Like, I was happy. I was ecstatic. I was like, I am no longer fighting for money to come in every single week. I'm just going to experience this and become a flow. And like the word conduit became a big, you know, digestible word for me. Like, what does a conduit look like? What is it? How is it? The even flow of abundance, like all of these things started to transform my world. Super spiritual for me, which was a great connector and made me far more happier than anything else in my entire life. Except for, you know, my odd travels here and there. But, you know, it just felt, again, more connection, right? Like there was a greater connection to an energy that I was just like, this is so incredible. Like to ride that type of energy is amazing. Money became a beautiful flow. I love money. Lots of people now still come in. I hate money. I'm like, but money does amazing things. And it's not a necessary evil. It's just, you know, the way sometimes that it is used and abused, of course, that's the evil part of it. But like money for a sanctuary does so many incredible things for people and animals, right? And it just expands on itself. Like a dollar can expand in so many great ways, right? And so you see that as just like, okay, here's the material thing, but here's the energy thing. So that was really cool. And being, having the ability to, I guess, explore this more natural sense of the world, right? And the animals' world and stuff. Like things just started to pop even more so, like expand even more so, elevate even more so. Everything that I wrote in the book, all of those goals and programs came fruition. Like they came to fruition. I'm like, this is, you know, this is what it all looks like now. This is amazing, right? But I didn't write past a certain point. So after all of this has been achieved and explored, there's this new blank slate that I was like, I don't know what this looks like. Like this is confusing and scary again. And I don't know how this is going to develop. And, you know, then we hit COVID and everything started to really change and you had to adapt super quickly again, right? To all of those things. And survival mode became a real thing, right? And you know, I've recognized that this is the life that I've been living for a number of years now, is being in survival mode just to kind of keep us going. So many places closed down during the pandemic, right? Because there was this, you couldn't make those connections that you really needed to. There's the flow of money wasn't coming in that you needed it to come in. Like you had to develop new ideas and fundraise and hustle, right?
I'm not being ignorant, but like COVID, I started my business in like October of 19, then COVID showed up in like February, but like I'm an online business. So it's, when I think about what you're saying right now, I'm like, it must have been like hell.
It was.
Like,
it was.
At a totally different level.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we managed to have some tours, like we managed to keep on going with the tours, but I was doing three tours a week as opposed to one tour a week because we had to break it up because you can only have so many people. And then when the tours came out, one of the ways that I can assess through story is how people are reacting to me. You don't know what they're reacting exactly because they're wearing their masks, right? So you're like, I need you to really focus on your body language and your eye contact with me. And I really need you to participate yeah. in this tour, because I want you to have a really good time, but I also want to have a good time too.
Yeah.
I want to be able to feel like there is this connection that we're making, mm-hmm. right? And it really put a lot of onus on people who were showing up, like the awareness level rose.
Yeah.
And I also found that during this time, other senses started to really kind of develop in people that I don't know if people really recognized or realized, but the animals definitely sensed it. Mm. So the isolation factors during COVID really started to, I think, change people's identity and evaluate their energy and what they wanted to explore. And during COVID, we learned a great deal of, like, you know, animal exploitation and how it's also plays a role in social oppression and, like, you know, injustices and slaughterhouses. And we saw that. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people started to transform their thoughts in that way too, right? So they were keen on knowing why they needed to anchor into this
yeah.
new version of, you know, accountability and responsibility. And so their energy definitely changed a lot. And the animals were very attracted to it.
Mm.
Like, there was this healing attraction that I think that they got, right? They weren't opposed to the masks. They weren't frightened of the masks or anything like that. Mm. People were just really centered,
mm.
you know, like more alone time, more yeah. whatever it might have been, whatever, you know, they were going through. Maybe they were just, like, so worn out.
Yeah.
So they weren't as inhibited or had these, like, default mechanisms inside of themselves saying, I'm right, you know, mm-hmm. I'm human, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is about, you know, being on top of the food chain, or, you know, they were just, like, letting things go and just things were just being more attracted, you know? Mm. So it was a big difference. But, I mean, COVID, it was just, you know, how do we run our big events? Because that was our big...
Yep.
you know, draw for funds, and you can't run big events, right? And we weren't a charity organization at that time either, so it's not like we can get grants or anything like that to follow up with, you know, lack of funding. It was hard.
Yeah.
And then the hay prices started to increase, right? Like you know, drought started to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And climate change became a little bit more real during mm-hmm. these times too, like the yeah. environment changed, which I've become a little bit more astute to understanding just because I'm in it a lot more.
Yep.
So you can definitely recognize the changes in your environment
mm-hmm.
More so than what a lot of other people might experience if they're living in the city and stuff. They might yep. not get that. But yeah, so yeah, it took me out of, like, you know, this is great. I feel like I'm really super thriving in my purpose to now I'm surviving in my purpose, yeah. you know? Yeah.
Is it in a better spot now? Like all that creativity and, like, or is it, where are you in this journey now?
I think it's still there. It's still very much present. I think there's a lot of healing that needs to go into living in such a survival state for so long. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, now that COVID's over, everything's better, because it's not. Like, yeah. things have happened since, and, you know, it's just this constant, like, okay, well, now we got to do this, and now we got to do this. And I think being a part of a sanctuary here in Alberta, these things are happening, and there's no one else who's gone through it yet.
Yeah.
So they're very unique, right? So it's like you're at the forefront of all of these. Mm. Sometimes they're battles, right? Mm. And you got to get through them
yeah.
to see what the outcome is going to be on the other end. But a lot of the time they're like, God, I'm exhausted. I don't want to keep doing this. But they keep happening. So yeah, you just got to keep being in this mode, in the thick of it all. Yeah. And I think, I'm looking forward. Like, I feel like I'm looking forward to feeling like, you know, we'll get to a stage where we're thriving again.
Yeah.
And we're not just living in this survival mode. I know it's there. I know that there's this light at the end of the tunnel, but mm-hmm. I think there's such a great reflection on all of it too. And there's a healing involved in all of this too. And I think a lot of us, whether we're conscious of it or not, are still in survival mode from that moment, mm-hmm. you know, because it was traumatic for a lot of people,
yeah,
like
just sure.
immediate and extreme yeah. change on mm-hmm. everybody. Right. Where I don't think a lot of people get the impact that it would have had on everybody, and then going back to work on top of that, right? So having this crazy extreme thing happening and your life is changing and is transitioning and transforming, which you might not even be aware of yet, and that's, like, you know, throwing you into this again, the salad bowl of emotions. Mm-hmm. And how do you survive off of that? And like lots of people went into survival mode. And mm-hmm. I don't know if a lot of people have come out of it yet, right? So it's different. It's a different climate for sure, an emotional climate. I've noticed that greatly, actually, in a lot of people that I've come to meet.
And you're very aware of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I part of that has increased my ability to be empathetic, but it's also increased my guards, right? It's increased my, can I trust this moment, right? Mm. And because it's very temperamental at times. Like, you just like, where did that come from? Like, what happened there, right? But the ebbs and flows, I guess, of it. And
amazing. I like, it's so unbelievable what you do. And I've never actually said this to a guest on here. Is there anything you want to like bring awareness to? Do you want to ask for anything right now? Do you want to direct people somewhere? Is there any way that this platform can help you with an ask or something you need?
I don't know. I mean, if you followed our Instagram accounts, of course, like, I'm not a big fan of Facebook, but if you followed our like website or Instagram, you know, there's always this, we always have a need for funds, right? So, it's generally how we exist is through funding and donations and things like this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have tours that are coming up. And we just went through a whole permit process with the Wheatland County to you raise your eyebrows, you're like, yeah, I think I'm aware of that.
I saw the end of that one.
Yeah. I think that's probably, you know, part of that you know, blow after blow kind of thing that you're like, when is this ever gonna give? Right? Where's the give in all of this? Yeah. And there's always like positive outcomes to all of these things, but you're still playing this, you know, when's it going to give? When's it going to give? Like, you know, you're not really, you're always waiting perpetually for that shoe to drop, unfortunately, at this point. And I want to get out of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, right now we're trying to catch up from all of this, from that whole thing from the beginning of the year with funding. And and we have a lot of fence infrastructure that we got to get through and shelter builds that we got to get through and fixes. And so funding is... Always the priority. Mm-hmm. And then, God, I really want to start reaching out to people and telling them to be kind. You know, you don't know what people are going through and how hard it is to kind of bounce back out of certain things. And just be kind and be patient and, you know, help where you feel like it's in alignment with you. And, you know, if it feels good and knowing that it's right to do and stuff. So I don't know.
Do you have a platform for that? Do you have like that, like a kindness platform?
What do you mean?
So what's interesting is some business owners, you know, they start a business and they're focused on products and service.
Yeah.
And that's like, they got to get it off the ground. They got to get sales, make money. Mm-hmm. And they reach a point where they dig into their purpose.
Yes.
And then there's a different platform that they latch onto the business. And once they find that platform, it could be kindness or... inclusion, whatever it is, as that interest increases, then the brand just goes with it, which obviously increases sales at the same time. Mm-hmm. So a kindness platform, you know, like do you have the ability to bring a voice to that?
I think that's what we do through our tours.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that's why I fought so hard for this permit.
Yeah.
Was because, you know, the values of kindness, compassion, and love, right? And even those values, those core values have changed in definition for me and what that might look like externally and internally. But the tours generally, like those are the qualities that we like to build with people and, you know, include responsibility and accountability. And recognizing that all of our choices, they matter in such a big way, you know, and if it's not for the animals, then it's for social justice. If it's not for social justice, then it's for the planet, it's for our environment. It's our way to make a greater impact is through one single choice. And to empower people on that choice is, you know, the method of our tours, right? Yeah. Like it's the energy of the tour. And then, you know, throughout the conversation is 5 hours long.
No.
Yeah, it's 5 hours. So be prepared.
Oh, so it's So you do have a platform to talk kindness.
And that's why, again, like that's why I fought for these, because it's an important platform. It's not a place where we generate a lot of funds, but it's one of the most important platforms that I can offer where I feel like I'm tapping into the greater purpose, right? So it's not just rescuing and making a wonderful, beautiful, long-lasting, loving home for the residents that are in my care or in our care as the organization. It's... I want to be able to also transform the world around me, right? And help people understand their connection, their interconnection to, you know, their world and like how much just one, you know, thought can really make an impact, right? Mm. And so these tours are really important to me in that way. That's my platform. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my more... personal platform, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, I barely do any research on anybody. So when you say, I was like, okay, tours, and I had my own idea in my head of what it might look like. And now I'm like,
Oh,
I'm so fucking out to lunch.
Well, they're very interactive, right?
Well, so, and with your background though, too, like,
yeah,
it's quite the combination.
Right? There's this development. Mm-hmm. And we were talking earlier off mic, I guess, is that what you call it? Where we were discussing, like, you know, when you're in your element, right? And that mastery, you don't even double think it. You don't even think twice about it, right? Like you just kind of engage with it. Yeah. It's like you just put on your thing and you do it, right? And something else is also helping you guide you through it, because again, this is your purpose, right? Yep. This is where you're aligned, right? This is your sense, your connection. So when I'm out of that element, it's a little bit more, you know, I guess when you talk with passion, when you're talking about your purpose, you're talking about passion. So that's kind of, you know, it's fairly easy to get into that. But when you're in your element, the story, right? The story develops as you're with the individuals that you're talking about and their experiences with you, and how their interactions with others. And then you sense that the story that you're discussing with the individual that you are with, and it's their voice. So they're not voiceless. It's their voice, and you're just, you know, transcribing it. You're just translating it to people who can understand the language that they're, you know, trying to say through their story. There's such a way to develop that story that encapsulates, you know, the energy, the feelings, the reasons why we're doing what we're doing, and then the impact that it has with the people who are listening to that story.
Yep.
So, you know, that type of development too. I never thought I was going to be a storyteller, right? I was just like, this is just, and some of their stories, like they're pretty, like they're all very magnificent stories. They're, you know, their magnitude has been life altering for a lot of people. It's resilience. It's, you know, there's power in triumph and triumphing over hard times and things that you've had to heal a lot from, right? Trauma is a real thing, not just for people, but for animals. You know, it's not exclusive, right? As humans, we all believe that, you know, we're the sole species that experience love and play, hurt and pain and grief and sadness and fear. You know, and we don't believe that any other species other than us, like, would ever experience these things, right? These connections, like motherhood and nurturing and fun and love and friendship and, you know, safety and security and all these things, right? We just, we just think as humans, we're the only ones. But when you hear their story, you realize, oh, this is big. This is not just me. It's not just me that feels grief. It's not just me that felt pain. It's not just me that went through trauma and had to heal through that. It's not just me who has trust issues. It's, you know, and what that might look like for an animal that went through a great deal of hurt to get to where they were, right? So it's different, and it does transform a lot of people's ideas on who they are as an individual and what they can do to transform the world around them. Because in the end, when we transform the world around us, then we start to see a better world in a greater sense, right? So, and hopefully we'll start to connect with that type of purpose in ourselves, like as an individuals, right?
But, yeah. It takes some work.
Yeah.
masterful. Like you said, like you just said, you alluded to off camera, you and I were talking about how it's comfortable being in your own environment. But, mm-hmm. you know, after I hear your story, understand your personality, and then to throw you into this situation.
Yeah.
Masterful. Thank you. I end the show with one question.
Okay.
This will be an interesting one for you. When I say Calgary, where does your head go? Oof.
Coming off an election. You know, oddly, I see Calgary like I experienced Taiwan. There was so much change that happened when I lived in Taiwan. Like it would happen so quickly. I see Calgary as the same. Like there's a lot of progress. I mean, there's lots of dead stops too, but there's a great amount of progress that's happening in such a speedy way. So I feel like people are they're becoming more open-minded, which is wonderful because they're open to greater dialogue. But there's also this other side of it that's the dichotomy, right? Like this is so great. How come everybody can't be here? But then you see this other like dark, gross, shady side of it all. And you're like, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. But all these things have to happen in order to make greater transformations. Like these little things that are, you know, abscesses. They need to come out and they need to be drained and then they need to go away to make this other greater idea, this wonderful, positive energy that needs to, you know, take over to happen, right? So I think it always happens no matter what kind of like, you know, form that we're in. There's always going to be this greatness and then there's going to be these like, ugh. Pockets and let's get rid of them pockets. But I mean, I see Calgary as very open-minded. I see Calgary as being very progressive. I see Calgary as being a great place for transformation. You know, there's so much potential. There's always possibility. Yeah. It's one of the things that I've always started with the Alice Sanctuary is like always believe that the impossible can be possible, right? Like it's, it is. I mean, there's no way that I should be where I am.
Yeah.
There's no way. Mm-hmm. If you think logically, you know, there's quite literally no way that I would be where I am without believing that the possible is found in the impossible, you know? So,
Amazing. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
This has been really, really cool.
This has been a great experience.
Yeah,
I've loved this conversation.
Yeah, it's.
I feel like I've talked the entire time. It's been like a monologue, but you know,
it's so funny because that's the. That's when I know I'm doing something right because that statement comes out. Most guests say the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yep. They're like,
you've just been talking.
I've just been talking. That's the monologue because most, you know, you talk a lot to people and it's like a conversation, right? This is a weird environment because it's just like, oh, it's on me.
Yeah.
And away you go.
But then you just go. You just go with it. So no, this has been wonderful. It's been, again, like I feel like there's really big parts now that are those pockets, right? Yeah. Like the great moments. Mm-hmm. And then you just got to remember all of those really amazing moments and they'll build into greater moments. So
totally. This
has been a great moment.
Thanks.
My line of right now of getting to where I want to be.
Yeah, your story.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks for inviting me.
You're very welcome.